This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Nice to catch up with John Miller. John, of course, now in the broadcasting wing of the Baseball Hall of Fame, and deservedly so. Longtime announcer on radio, and of course, now the voice of the San Francisco Giants, and has been for a number of years as well. And for 21 years, he teamed with Joe Morgan on ESPN's Sunday Night Baseball broadcast, the best broadcasting crew I think I've ever seen do baseball on television. John, let's talk a little bit about your career. When you got noticed, or at least notified, that you were going into the Baseball Hall of Fame, knowing where you started from, what was your first reaction to that?
Well, I was very excited. As you might expect, I was in Cartagena, Colombia at that time on vacation with my wife, and Edgar Renteria, the former Giants shortstop, now the World Series MVP, who is from Colombia, always used to tell me he should go down to Colombia. I'm sure you'll really enjoy it. It's very beautiful, lots of history. And I guarantee you, if you go down there, you will never forget it. And so there we were, the Hall of Fame calls, and I remember thinking immediately, wow, Edgar was so right. I will never forget this visit to Cartagena, Colombia, that's for sure.
When you think back about the fact that you were 22 years old in the Bay Area and you were doing A's games at that particular time, those early years, and then where you are right now, what's most meaningful to John Miller about where he has started from and where he is now?
Well, I'm just, I think, mainly felt very thankful that I've had such good fortune to have my first job in baseball come when I was not just 22 years old at such a tender young age, but also the A's at that time were the best team in baseball. They had just won two consecutive World Series, and the year I was there, they proceeded to win their third in a row, one of the all-time great teams. And so I really was able to really get my sort of almost like postgraduate degree in Major League Baseball and how it was played, because they did everything well, everything correctly, and I think that's a ball club that's probably underappreciated and should be on the list of all-time great teams, and you don't often see it, probably because they were in Oakland. They had the colorful uniforms, which were considered oddities at that time, and Charlie Finley kind of overshadowed everything. And then they weren't an East Coast ball club, probably played into it as well. But I certainly will never forget them, the A's of Catfish Hunter, Vida Blue, Ken Holtzman, Raleigh Fingers, Reggie Jackson, Joe Rudy, Gene Tennis, Sal Bando, Campy Campaneris. It was a well-balanced ball club, and great pitching, great bullpen. There was no aspect of the game in which they did not excel.
One thing I know, John, about all the outstanding announcers is that somewhere along the way, especially when they were young, they heard somebody that really left a mark on them and kind of motivated them to follow, at least in the broadcasting footsteps, not necessarily in their footsteps. And in your particular case in this Bay Area, who were some of the broadcasters you used to listen to?
Yeah, it's true. People used to say when young broadcasters would send out their audition tapes that you could tell right where that guy was from, what part of the country, by the established big league announcer that he sounded like. And guys were influenced by those people, and you'd hear a guy and you'd say, wow, he must be from the Midwest. He sounds like Jack Buck, or he'd sound like Vin Scully. You'd figure, well, he must be from Southern California. I grew up a Giants fan in the Bay Area, and Russ Hodges and Lon Simmons were the Giants broadcasters. And in fact, when they called me to say that I'd won the Ford Frick Award given out by the Hall of Fame, the first names literally that came to mind for me right at that moment were Russ Hodges, Lon Simmons, because they were the guys who taught me the game. They taught me about the Giants, and I think they really taught me the love of the game. But the other name that came up was Willie Mays, because they were the guys who described the rather wondrous exploits of Willie Mays, who, for my money, is the greatest player that I've ever seen, and maybe the greatest player of all time, which, I mean, we could have long, long arguments about that. But and that was also one of the great things. Not only did I think of Willie immediately, Willie called me to congratulate me on winning the award, and that was a thrill all by itself. I see Willie a lot at the ballpark. He still works for the Giants, but had Willie Mays called me. In fact, we were going through the Panama Canal, and when Willie called, And I said, wow, this is maybe the most unique trip through the Panama Canal anybody has ever had to get a call from Willie Mays. So Willie had a good laugh over that. And I remember telling him, I said, listen, Willie, I understand you're a Hall of Famer, the greatest player I've ever seen. You're what the Hall of Fame is all about. They gave an award to me as a broadcaster, but I know that's different than actually being a Hall of Famer. And then Willie said, well, I know what you're talking about, but the fact is you get this award and everybody's going to refer to you as a Hall of Famer, so just get used to it.
One thing, John, that I know about the outstanding announcers is they have a commonality. Now, I'm going to give you my perspective on what that commonality is, and I'd like to get your reaction to it, and maybe you have an addition you'd like to add to it. But I always think that the great announcers, the ones that you mentioned, and Vin Scully and Jack Buck and others like that, that they all have an appreciation and an understanding of the history of the game, the players that played it over the long number of years that they've been broadcasting, and they always seem to be very protective of that history. Am I correct in that observation?
Well, I think that's true. And that's part of what I think sets baseball apart from the other sports, that you really could compare what Alex Rodriguez does today with what a great player did 100 years ago, 80 years ago, because it's still the pitcher 60 feet, 6 inches from home plate. And at its essence, the game is that pitcher versus that hitter. And the statistics are kept. Obviously, there have been changes in the game in terms of the size of ballparks, the emphasis on home runs, and all of that sort of thing. But I think the game itself, somebody could come in a time machine from 1905 and watch a game today and know exactly what they were watching. The only thing they'd have to have explained to them would be the designated hitter. But otherwise, it's the same game with basically the same rules. So I think there is that, as Roger Angel once called it, the thread of the game. He wrote this timeless essay, one of his annual essays in the New Yorker about baseball. Years ago, when Ron Darling and Frank Viola were both in college, and they faced each other in a college baseball game, and Darling was from Yale and Viola was from St. John's, and we didn't know that they were going to end up being outstanding big league pitchers at that time. But there was a guy who had been an outstanding big league pitcher who was in the stands with Roger Angel watching those two guys, those two future big leaguers. And that was Smokey Joe Wood, who had been a great big league pitcher way back when, one of the best in the game, who also at that time was then the athletic director at Yale. And he called it the thread of the game. And I think that's, I got a lot of that history from Russ Hodges, who went all the way back into the 40s as a big league broadcaster. And so on and so forth. So I talked to Willie Mays. That's one of the great joys of being a Giants fan and a Giants broadcaster. So you see Willie at the ballpark all the time, and I'm constantly asking Willie questions about Mickey Mantle and the old days and guys like Monty Irvin, who played with Willie when he first came up, was like an older brother to him, and the way things were. And so I'm continually getting that appreciation from one of the greatest players there ever was. In terms of the way things used to be and how former players, how they really did play the game.
John, I'd be interested in also how you and the other great announcers came about anticipating and appreciating the great moment in a game.
Well, I think it's very true. One of the great things about Vin Scully, and for me, Vin Scully is the best baseball broadcaster there is and that there ever has been and ever likely will be. Vinny is that good and has all my appreciation for his greatness as a broadcaster. But Vinny's got a million stories. He's a great resource, a great treasure with all those stories. And he knows how to weave them into a broadcast. That's part of what makes his broadcast so much fun and so entertaining. And there's so much knowledge there. But at the same time, what sets Vinny apart from a lot of other people is that his stories never seem to get in the way of the game. He has that great sense of timing as to when a story would be apropos versus, wait a minute, this guy's coming up now. That story doesn't go here because everything might be about to change in this game. And so I remember Bob Costas and I years ago used to kid each other that it must have been that Vinny had so much respect from all of the players that they waited until he finished his story before they hit one off the left field wall, because that was that's something that, you know, it happens to everybody, I guess, except Vinny. And right, you get to the punchline of your story or whatever, and the guy blasts one off the left center field wall, and all hell breaks loose, and you're still trying to get that punchline in. But Vinny, I think, just had that great sense of timing.
John Miller is with us, a member of the broadcast wing of the Hall of Fame, and deservedly so. And, of course, not only an outstanding radio play-by-play announcer, but also for 21 years, the voice of Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN with Joe Morgan. We'll talk about that aspect of his career as we continue on Sports Byline.
This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
John Miller has joined us on Sports Byline USA, Hall of Fame broadcaster. And as I alluded before the break, John, I mentioned that aside from being just an outstanding radio play-by-play man, you were also as outstanding doing television on Sunday night with ESPN for 21 years with Joe Morgan. Not everybody can make that transition from radio to television to radio. And I've had a lot of announcers say that it's a little bit easier for the radio guy to go to television than maybe it is for the television guy to go to radio. Your thoughts about doing both?
Well, I remember when I took the ESPN job, it was 1989, and we were going to start with Sunday Night Baseball in 1990. And in 89, NBC and ABC both still we're doing games every week. NBC had the Saturday afternoon game, and ABC usually had a Monday night game. And I ran into Al Michaels, for me, one of the greatest voices of the game, and known more now as a football announcer, but I think as good as there has ever been as a baseball broadcaster, for sure. And I just asked him if he had any advice to me about the television, especially doing national television. And he said, well, you know, in radio, the most important thing is the ability to describe vividly what's going on so that the people can visualize it. In television, that's absolutely irrelevant and the least important thing. In fact, you don't ever really want to do that because people can already see that. So he says it's just a question of reminding yourself of that. And I think that was the other aspect was simply the, you know, the expert analysts, the Joe Morgan, the Tim McCarver, your partner. And I think the way it's evolved now is that those people, John Madden, you know, years ago, Al McGuire in basketball, and, you know, on down the list, people really get that inside info from them, and they look forward to getting that info from the former player, that it becomes the central figure in the telecast. So as a play-by-play man, I think your job is more like the just give him the opportunity to really have those moments where people say, wow, I didn't know that, and feeling like they learned something from him, but also to keep the nuts and bolts of what's going on, what's the score, what inning are we in, keep the game going in terms of the structure of it, because I think still, even with that info from the former player, the only reason really to be a baseball fan is because it's exciting. There's a lot of excitement and drama inherent in the game, and I think the play-by-play guy, whether it's on TV or radio, the job is still the same in that regard, is to bring out the drama, the sense of something could be about to happen, and so on and so forth. So I think all of that is still very important. And sometimes on TV, I think they tend to lose sight of that. You know, the producers and whatnot, they get kind of carried away with all of the things that they pre-planned, elements they want to talk about and roll into the telecast at the expense of what's actually happening, and sort of, hey, let's not get in the way of what's actually happening. We get A-Rod coming up against Josh Beckett at Fenway Park in a tie game. It doesn't get any better than that. That's why the people tuned in. Let's just pull back and let the people savor those great moments.
Certainly when you are a broadcaster for a team, one of the challenges might be being fair with what you say about the team, being critical at the right moment and maybe not being a homer. I know the late Harry Carey, a lot of people in Chicago loved him because you always knew who he was rooting for. And that's always a very thin line, John. How difficult is it to be both fair but also critical at the right moments and know that maybe even ownership? Because you ran into that, I think, with the Orioles with Peter Angelos. He thought you were too critical of the Baltimore team and not enough of a homer.
Yeah, apparently so, although ultimately it worked out well that he didn't offer me a new contract in Baltimore, and I came to San Francisco. And although I had wanted to stay in Baltimore at that time, it's worked out real well for me coming to San Francisco. So sometimes things work out for the best, that's for sure. But I think, for instance, Harry Carey, his stock in trade as a broadcaster was that he was the fan in the booth, that he was just like all the Cubs fans out there, and before that, White Sox fans, and before that, Cardinal fans. Even for 1 year, he was with the A's, but that he was just like them in the booth, and he was rooting for the club to do well just like they were, even though, obviously, he was not just like a fan. You know, the fans don't get to go to every single game home and road and go into the clubhouse and go out to dinner with the players and the managers and have the access to all of these things that Harry had. But I think that to call Harry a homer, and many people did, was just to miss the point. Harry rooted for them, but he was not a homer. My definition of a homer is that when things would go bad for your team, that you would try to downplay that, like it really wasn't all that bad or whatever. Harry was just the opposite. Harry would be outraged, just like a fan. You know, Ryan Sandberg came up and popped up with the bases loaded, and Harry was outraged, like, what's the matter with him? $7 million a year, and he pops up with the bases loaded. I can't believe it. You know, so Harry was outraged just like a fan. So, and I think Cubs fans, White Sox fans, Cardinal fans, wherever he worked, always felt like Harry was leveling with him, that they always, if the guy was poor, doing a bad job, that Harry was all over him for that. And if he did well and something exciting, that nobody was more excited about it than Harry. So, you know, Vin Scully, I think, is very similar. If the Dodgers do well, Vinny gives you that, and he's not openly rooting for the ball club. And yet, if you're a Dodger fan, you feel very secure in the knowledge that Vinny is giving you the Dodgers story today, and if they do well, then Vinny's going to be all over that, and will give you the great sense of how well things are going for the Dodgers, that's for sure.
When you were in Baltimore, you had to deal with a very difficult time with the team. They lost, how many was it at the beginning of the season?
Yeah, I think it was like they lost 180 games in a row to start that 1 year. It was pretty bad. It was actually a 21-game losing streak. So it was the longest American League losing streak in history at any time in the season. And no team had ever started a year with more than 10 straight losses or whatever it was. And the Orioles just kept on going and going. And a team that had Cal Ripken and Eddie Murray, future Hall of Famers, also had Fred Lynn in that club, Terry Kennedy, Larry Sheets, who was a big strapping home run hitter. It was astounding, and you would think impossible the way baseball is for that to happen to any team. But sure enough, 1988, that's what happened. And it really was a depressing time for the ball club. But at the same time, Joe Angel was my partner. Joe is a very fine radio voice of the Orioles to this day and very popular in Baltimore. And in a way, it was like the best thing that ever happened for me and Joe, because there were 300-400 members of the media that were traveling with the ball club because this story was so fascinating. And they were all looking for things to write about. And I remember the Washington Post did a Sunday magazine story that put us on the cover with the headline, "How does something so bad end up sounding so good?" And it was all about me and Joe. And we got some notoriety because the broadcasts were still, you know, very good and filled with the story. But at the same time, we were never depressed about it. And I think that's the difference. We're a real homer. Everything is about his team. If they're doing poorly, he sounds down. And the other team does something great, he's not excited about that whatsoever. So we gave you the game and what was going on in the game and an accurate depiction of it, and then we got a lot of publicity about it because people needed something to write about. So, but well, I was always proud of that because I'd always felt like the game is the thing. The best case scenario is your team wins and you have good news to tell the fans about. There's lots of excitement. But there's still a lot of interesting, exciting things that happen in any game. Even if your team is not in the pennant race, the broadcasts would still have many areas in which they could be fun and compelling. And then we got really, careful what you wish for. That year we got more than we ever could have hope for in terms of trying to prove that theory correct, and I feel like we did.
One of the things that Willie Mays told me one time, he lamented that today with the players being the way they are and the money that's around in baseball, that you don't hear a lot of players around the batting cage telling stories like they used to, and you kind of alluded to that a little bit earlier. Is that one of the aspects, the mystiques of the game that are kind of missing today, you think, John?
Not for me personally. I feel like in many ways, that has not changed at all. One thing that has changed is with the professional batting instructor, there's a lot of work going on at the batting cage just before the game. It's not sort of the leisurely sort of, get your swings and try to just keep, the muscle memory going and whatnot. But where the batting coach is watching with a critical eye everything that's going on, even in the batting practice, and they're working on specific things. Maybe a guy's had problems opening up too soon or whatever. So there's actual instruction going on at the batting cage. So sometimes you don't have the kind of access to talk to a guy because he's working on something that usually in the old days did not happen so often. But I think the great thing about the Giants winning the World Series, and it involves Willie Mays very much, because Willie was on the last Giants team to have won a World Series all the way back in 1954. This week, the Giants have been in New York and with Willie and the World Series trophy. The Giants, of course, started in New York, and they went back to their roots, sort of an unprecedented occurrence. And Willie went to a public school that exists on the site of the old Polo Grounds in Harlem, where Willie broke in. And Willie, in effect, went home and met the kids and told them the stories. And then there were old Giants fans who were still living in New York, and the Giants sought them out and had a luncheon with them and let them pose for pictures with the World Series trophy and meet Willie Mays and Buster Posey, who was back there as well. And this is really a fantastic thing that I have never seen happen before, where a team from one area goes to a completely different area that other teams utilize as their home area to share their World Series success and their history with people in that area. And that was kind of a remarkable thing in New York. And I think it says a lot about New York as a great baseball city and a sense of history, but also about Willie Mays. You probably couldn't have done that if you didn't have Willie Mays around. And he is the link, between the Giants of New York and the Giants of San Francisco.
Yeah, and I think he's a baseball icon as well, no matter how old you might be. We only have 2 minutes left, John, and one thing, having talked to you over the years and how nice you've been to me here at Sports Byline, and I remember one of the conversations we had talking about the early part of your career starting up in Santa Rosa at the television station up there and doing the swimming meet and all the other sports that you did along the way before you finally did make it as a major league broadcaster. Do you kind of sit back and in your own personal time reflect and smile a little bit and chuckle a little bit about your career path?
Every day, having come back to the Bay Area where I grew up and where everything started for me, has certainly brought a lot of that stuff back to me in a very vivid way. That's for sure. But and I think I always thought that I would just love to make a living in broadcasting. And I as a 16, 17 year old, I thought, well, the odds are pretty long that I'd ever make it to Major League Baseball. Looks like Russ Hodges and Lon Simmons will still be doing those games 40 years from now. And the guys don't seem to leave those jobs. But I didn't really care. I just thought, I love the whole idea of it. I love the doing of it, that's what I want to do. I had a passion for it. And so it's been just great good fortune for me to have worked out the way it is. But I think And I know that you love your job, and that's why you're so good at it. And I love my job, but I think that for me, and we can have an argument about this, but I had the best job that anybody could ever have, and so that's why I feel so fortunate.
I think most people that enjoy what they do and are probably pretty good at doing it feel the way that you do. John, it's been an honor to be able to call you a friend, be able to listen to you, as many of the people in the San Francisco Bay Area and, of course, nationally, when you did those 21 seasons on Sunday Night Baseball with ESPN. Thank you, John. I really, really appreciate it. John Miller with us. John, of course, now a member of the Baseball Hall of Fame, the broadcasting wing of the Baseball Hall of Fame, and currently the radio play-by-play voice for the San Francisco Giants, has been doing so for double-digit years in the Bay Area. And, of course, for 21 years, straight years, he was the Sunday night play-by-play voice along with Joe Morgan on ESPN's Sunday Night Baseball broadcast. He grew up in the Bay Area, and he was doing A's games by the time he was 22. Also did games in Baltimore with the Texas Rangers and with the Boston Red Sox. I'm Ron Barr. We'll take a break as we continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on Sports Byline.